Hey, call the meeting to order for the Port of Astoria regular session, February 3rd. May we have the roll call, please?
Commissioner Hill.
Here.
Commissioner Fickle is absent. Commissioner Stevens.
Here.
Commissioner Campbell.
Here.
And Commissioner Roan.
Here. Please join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands. One nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
There any changes or additions to the agenda? Public comment for items on the agenda. Do we have any public comment? If you are interested, you need to fill out a comment card. Like everyone's fine. Moving on. The consent calendar. We have the meeting minutes for the regular meeting of January 6th, the airport advisory meeting of January 12th, the workshop session of January 20th, the financials of December 2025, and the event calendar for February 2026. If the commission so chooses, it can approve the consent calendar with one motion. Or if you'd like to pull something.
I move we accept the consent calendar as presented.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
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 Consent calendar is approved. Under advisory, we have the Oregon Commercial Dungeness Crab petition. Turn that over to staff.
Thank you, Commissioner Roan. Starting on page 23 of your packet, you'll see the documentation for this agenda item. So this was brought to my attention a little while back, but I had received an email from the Oregon Public Ports Executive Director Mark Landauer outlining a recent petition that was filed with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. I know Mike Sandin at the Port of Garibaldi has been involved with it, this as well, and working with Mark to provide information. So I did want to just real briefly read through a portion of the email. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife is sending you this notice to inform you that on December 11th, 2025, the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission received a formal petition from several conservation groups to adopt new measures and amend existing rules in the Oregon commercial Dungeness crab fishery to reduce the risk of marine life entanglements. The petition's stated purpose is to strengthen Oregon's current entanglement risk reduction measures, create a pathway for authorization of safer pop-up fishing gear, and establish a process for timely public reporting of marine mammal or sea turtle entanglements in Oregon commercial Dungeness crab fish gear. And so the bullet point key items are to establish a process for pop-up gear authorization, adjusting late season measures to include a 40% pot limit reduction and 30 fathom depth restriction, prohibiting conventional gear after April 1st, requiring OD F&W to provide public notice of any marine mammal or sea turtle entanglement in Oregon, and then requiring emergency measures be taken, including zonal or statewide closures to conventional gear in response to confirmed entanglements. By statute, the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission must either initiate rulemaking or issue a written denial within 30 days of the petition being received. So that deadline would be March 11th of 2026. The agency is in the process of reviewing the petition as required by statute. ODF&W will provide an assessment, a recommendation to the commission at their meeting on February 20 of 2026. We invite public comment on the petition's proposed new rules and amendments, and they have contact information down there at the bottom. So in addition to this, I have received communication from some of the fishermen in the community. I do know there was a it sounds like a standing room only attended meeting at England Marine last week within the fishing community, just to talk about what the impacts this could have if this petition and the requests in the petition are indeed acted upon by ODF&W. So at this time, I don't know if there's any specific action for the port to take, other than I did want to make the commission aware of this. Obviously, there is public comment that's being taken now, and That would be due before the decision on March 11th, although they do have a meeting on February 20th as well. And so I wanted to present this to the commission. And then if there was a desire for the commission as a body to provide some sort of written comment, we could put that on next meeting's agenda, which would be, I believe, the 17th would be our next meeting, and we could get that sent off. So I would be open to any questions you have about this, but I thought this was a worthwhile topic to put on the agenda rather than just having it as a comment item at the end of the meeting.
I would certainly support a letter for the crab fisheries, if that would be the, and ask the other commissioners if that's agreeable. If it is, then we
for
can,
sure. Yeah,
and absolutely. We can then work with Mark Landauer or someone with knowledge of the industry to help us craft a letter that's appropriate and meaningful. So is that something the staff can follow up with Mark Landauer or someone from the industry?
We can work on putting a draft proposal together and maybe get that to the commission before the next meeting for input.
England Marine, I'm suspecting the fishermen were not too much in favor.
No, and I think there's real concern, especially with some of the smaller boats, of just the cost impact of implementing new gear and restrictions. And so what I've heard anyway from that side is that if implemented, this would continue to sort of shrink the number of boats in the fishery and would seemingly give advantage to some of the larger vessels a permit that allows them to bring in more volume, which can help offset some of these costs.
Traditionally, the state and federal regulators control fisheries by introducing inefficiencies in the fishing gear. This is a big step beyond that.
Yeah, and then there's concerns too, because obviously this would only apply to the Oregon fishery. Then what that would mean, because the theory is that a lot of those vessels then would just move out of the Oregon fishery, and then what's the impact on Oregon's economy if that fishery largely moves probably mostly up north?
It's my understanding that fisheries, I think we appreciate the value of them, but that the crab fishery value is greater than all of the other fisheries combined, so the impact could be significant. Okay, I think we all agree on moving forward with a letter of support.
Okay.
Thank you, staff, for bringing that to the commission's attention. For action items, we'll start on page 61, and the surplus, the item of action topic is the surplusing of the dredge Falcons. So I'll turn that over to staff.
To help us with that, we have our head of maintenance,
Joe Teddy.
Joe Teddy's here. Joe, do you want to come up?
Just to kind of set the table on this, this goes back to a meeting that we had last year when we were looking to surplus the dredge. We had it listed, but did not get any biters on the sale when we had it listed on the Gov Deals site. And since then, we looked at insurance requirements to keep that in the water until we've dismantled it. It's actually out of the water now, and it is sitting on Pier 3. So we're looking at coming to the commission, and rather than selling it as a complete unit, potentially parting it out. So that's what we want to come to the commission with.
Who made that decision?
Well, we made the decision to pull it out of the water because it was in bad shape.
You need to tear it apart and piece it out.
What?
That's what we're discussing.
It's why we're bringing it to the commission tonight.
Well, I'm definitely opposed to that.
Let's hear from staff.
You've got.
Let's hear from staff first. We'll start with Joe Teddy.
Go ahead.
Yes. Like I say, we've tried to, auction it off to Ritchie Brothers, Gov Deals, with no luck. The dredge is over 50 years old. It's useful life. People have seen that there's not much value left in it. The dredge needed to come out of the water due to, taking on water, getting some leaks in it. So the only way to do that is to break it down to get it out of the water. And at this point, parting it out is, you know, about the best value we're going to get out of it at this point.
Commissioner Hill, you were saying something there with your expertise in the marine world. Maybe we could hear from you first.
I just have a couple of questions. How do you consider the value of the engines, for example?
Well, we can, yeah.
Pretty good shape.
You know, for the hours, everything is pretty well used up its useful life, you know, so try to look at, you know, what's for sale online right now and go with the best price we can. So, and then working with WCG, trying to negotiate a fair price. So
best scrap price.
I'm trying to get the best we can, Jim.
Here's where you're advertising, right here. You're advertising in this?
No.
I don't think so. I didn't see it. That's where everybody looks for the dredges. And it would probably sell if you got it back to Louisiana. Somebody would pick it up because it's a shallow water dredge in the bayous. So I think by selling the part of the dredge, you're going to end up with a junk pile there. And ain't got nothing else. For what little we're getting for it, I think we should continue to try to sell it.
Well, with the age of the equipment being over 50 years old, people see that there's just
not. I'm over 50 years old, too. So what's the hell?
A lot different than,
huh?
A lot different than a piece of equipment.
I've got an airplane out there that's 50 years old and it's like new. So some things you just don't get rid of. They have longevity. But I think we ought to give it another shot and advertise it as boats and harbors. And that's the people that I'll get to. I gave you a list of people to contact. I think Diana had it and she had fastened it on to you when we first started to try to sell this thing. Of potential people that might buy it. Did anybody contact them?
I didn't make contact with anyone, no.
Mr. Stevens?
No.
As far as I'm concerned, it looks like we have done our homework on this. Unless we have further questions that need to be answered.
We have a motion to approve the sale of the surplus dredge equipment. Items 1 through 4 are listed as the dredge equipment for sale document to WCT Marine and Construction for $11,000. Would someone like to make that motion? Make the motion. Is there a second?
I think I'll second that. And the reason, Jim, for example, is I'm pretty familiar with that dredge, and it's a pile of steel right now. And it's I don't see anybody picking that thing up for any kind of price that's much better than what we could get right here. I just don't see it, and it you might get rid of it, but you're not going to get much.
It wouldn't hurt to advertise it one more time and do it in the right place.
Are you going to lose Willie doing that though? What? Do you have any feelings on that?
Yeah, we probably, you know, would lose interest in it.
All Willie's taking are pontoons and spuds
and engines and
no, he's not taking the engines.
Says he is.
No, it's just the red stuff there. Turn your page over. That's all Willie's thinking and he wants. And honestly, he's paying some pretty good money there. I mean, it's not as much as if you tried to make your own spuds, but he's not taking the bar or the dredge apart.
So for everyone's benefit, we're looking at staff document, and there's an 80 foot by 8 foot by 6 foot pontoon. Actually, there's two pontoons, and then four spuds. The spuds, there's two spuds that are 70 feet long by 24 inch diameter.
Yeah.
And then there's two spuds that are 40 foot long by 24 inch diameter. So that's all that's on the table right now.
Those could be replaced easily if somebody wanted the rest of it.
So yeah, the engines are still available.
There's a demand for spuds. You know what it costs to build those? You were in the shipbuilding. I had two sets built at $75,000 a set.
Oh yeah.
Equipment is available online. It's very easy for anyone to find what they're looking for, in my opinion, if they look it up online. So I think with Ritchie Brothers and the government surplus site, that would be sufficient to get the word out. And all those other items, including the barge itself, I believe, are for sale. So the limited scope of what's on the table.
Well, I think Commissioner Hill gave a good second opinion, which concurs with staff.
All the goodness is still there. You can
the spuds in the way
take it home
and sell in a heartbeat. Those spuds would sell the rations. I know in Seattle, you'd pick some things up in a heartbeat.
So, for everyone's benefit, items first that have been I outlined, items 1 through 4 for sale for $11,000 by WCT Marine. Are there any other additional questions or comments? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
Okay. Yeah. The items listed red are sold to WCT Marine for $11,000. The next item is on page 63, the Airport Advisory Committee member assignments. I'll turn that over to Matt. Is that yours?
Yeah.
Is it mine? I can take it. What we're looking here is on our Airport Advisory Committee. We have three members of the committee whose term expires this year. Committee members serve two-year terms. And so for Steve Dillard, Wes Tolan, and Mark Smith, we are looking to extend their service that currently expires June 30 of this year and extend that through June 30 of 2028.
That's agreeable to the commission. I'd entertain a motion to approve the terms of service for Steve Dillard, Wes Toland, and Mark Smith.
I move to approve the terms of service for Steve Dillard, Wes Toland, and Mark Smith on the Airport Advisory Committee through June 30th, 2028.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Are there any additional questions or comments? All those in favor say aye.
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 I'd like to thank them publicly for their service, and I did attend one of their meetings, and I thought it seemed like a good group of gentlemen sharing their expertise with our community. Our next item is a sponsorship opportunity. This is solely at the discretion of the commission. The item of concern is a commercial fisherman appreciation lunch, but it's a fundraiser. I don't know if staff would elaborate on that.
Yeah, I can talk a little bit to it. So page 65 of your packet, you'll see the flyer that was sent out. As you can probably imagine, we get sponsorship requests all the time here at the port. And as I've said before, I don't believe as the executive director or as staff, we should be making the determination if there is going to be sponsorship of what we sponsor. I think that should be the electeds, the commission that do that. I do filter these though. Sometimes these requests really have nothing to do with the port's mission. And so the ones that eventually come to you are ones that have some tie to what the port does or what our mission is. So with this ask, I think originally they had actually talked to Brendan out in the boatyard about this. I have as sort of some background because I wasn't super familiar with this Fish Her nonprofit organization. I did have a conversation with Kurt England, who was very familiar with them and told me they were legit and they do a lot of good work. And so in front of you today is it looks like three levels of sponsorship opportunity should the commission wish. With that, we get a logo on the t-shirts that are going to be made. And this is for a fisherman appreciation lunch that will be hosted by England Marine on March 28th.
The organization provides like safety equipment and different services to the fishing community, do they not?
Correct. And I know at times they've done things when fishermen or their families have had unexpected loss or issues, they've gone and really help support that family through hard times. They host a number of events in the region with, again, the goal of raising money and providing support for the commercial fishing community. So as I said, prior to this, I wasn't real familiar with the work they did, but I have done some research. And then obviously in talking with Kurt and him kind of his, giving his stamp of approval gave me some assurance that if the commission does decide to offer this sponsorship, it's going to a good cause.
We do have a pretty good connection with the trad fishermen with Da Nang and Bornstein, and they are pretty well connected. And I would think we should give them $500.
Okay, so I'll take that as a motion to for the commission to authorize $500 for a sponsorship for this organization, which is serving the fishing community, especially those in need. Is there a second?
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Any other Commissioner Stevens, you want to weigh in?
Of course. Traditionally, in the fishing fleet, fishermen have resisted survival equipment, believe it or not. It was the fishermen's wives who were behind the movement to include things like survival suits and enhanced GPS EPIRBs for fishing vessels. When I first joined the Coast Guard, we were always too late because we did not have GPS, we did not have satellites, and the fishermen did not have all that great survival equipment. So I'm all for this. That's what Commissioner Campbell and I went through the fisherman's lunch last year, and I think it's a real good deal. It's a way for us to support one of our biggest constituencies, the fishermen. Well, certainly I concur.
I like it that their mission is to help those that need, those people who really need a little assistance, and then improving the safety and well-being of the fleet as a whole. Commissioner Hill? Okay.
Good.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Thank you. Bringing that to our attention. Our next item is this Spectrum contract. Just pound on page 68. Melanie, financial director, will share with us this topic.
So if you turn to page 68 of your packet, there's a cover letter explaining why we need commission approval for this. Last year, we had the commission approve two agreements with Spectrum so we could get fiber to the Gateway building. One of those agreements was executed, and the other one was not properly executed by Spectrum. So we've been overpaying for about the last year. And to make up for that, they're offering a $2,500 credit plus a new contract, which is at a $50 discount. So we need commission approval to move forward with a new three-year agreement. Probably effective next month to replace the one that was never properly executed last year. The agreement starts on page 69 of your packet and is for $500 a month. Questions? It's pretty straightforward.
Okay, so we need a motion to approve the service order with Spectrum in the amount of $500 for a 36-month term and authorize the executive director to sign the agreement.
I move to approve the service order with Spectrum in the amount of $500 for a 36-month term and authorize the executive director to sign the agreement.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right. Any additional questions or comments? All those in favor say aye.
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 Motion passes. Thank you. Last action item is a Able Houston engagement letter for legal counsel. Executive Director Isom.
Thank you, Commissioner. On page 72 of your packet, you'll see the engagement letter from Cable Houston. It's important to note that we're not really changing attorneys here. It's that Eileen Akins, who for a while was running her own firm, Northwest Government Legal? Yeah. I think that Northwest Local Government. I knew I was going to get that wrong. So anyway, she's gone to work for Cable Houston. And so this would basically be to retain her services, but through rather than her own company, it would be through Cable Houston. And so we are asking for a motion to authorize the executive director to sign this representation agreement.
I noticed in here she mentioned we might want to use another lawyer or a paralegal. I found out along the way that paralegals are probably just as good and a lot cheaper. So that's something we're going to engage in.
Yeah, so I've had discussions with her about that because actually the rate for her services goes up. It was $285 an hour, and the rate via Cable Houston is $350 an hour. However, as you point out, there will be some savings in that in her own firm, she was doing almost all of the work. She actually joked to me that she finally has an assistant. And so obviously work that's done, background that she can assign to others would save us money. Even though her actual rate is going up some.
A conversation I had with the executive director, he mentioned that she is spending lots of time doing things that she doesn't want to. And now that she's working for another organization, she can focus on what her work is. And that administrative billing, that sort of function is provided by this group. So it's practical. And like you said, if we're able to utilize paralegal service, then depending on the amount of usage, we could save money.
They have that probably in the same firm she's with, right?
Rick, I don't know what their total count is, but Cable Houston is a larger firm. We actually had used them a couple years ago when we were resolving the issue in the log yard with Astoria Forest Products. We had brought in Cable Houston to help us out.
Okay, so there's a motion if one of the commissioners would like to make that motion. I'll let them read it rather than unless.
I move to authorize the executive director to sign a legal representation agreement between Cable Houston LLC and the Port of Astoria.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any additional comments, questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. That moves us into public comment for non-agenda items. Is there any public comment for non-agenda items? Anyone? We'll move to commission reports. Commissioner Hill.
Thought I had one, but that was last week. I don't have a comment.
Okay. Commissioner Stevens.
Well, I did attend the Columbia River Solutions Group meeting last week. Found that it was interesting. It was mostly U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and supporting agencies like Fish and Wildlife. It was an all-day meeting. I learned many things, but most of them weren't that applicable to commission work. And I did note that staff I covered with our environmental officer, Stacy, and she was online with the group. And I think that's probably more appropriate. If you ever want to go to one of those just to learn something, it's free. Was it not? We didn't have to pay anything, did we?
No.
Okay, yeah. That's all I have to report.
Commissioner Campbell?
I don't have anything to put in. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll turn it over to Executive Director Isom.
I don't think I have anything additional beyond what was in the agenda also.
That, to turn the page over and see what happens next.
I have a question for the Executive Director.
Commissioner Stevens.
I read, I think it was in the Daily Historian that we're moving to become a embark debark port for cruise ships.
Yeah, so I've got a lot of questions about that article that was posted. And it was basically a summary of the airport advisory committee. And then I think there's even been some letters to the editor that have been posted since then. And so I guess the context of that conversation was having to do with the idea of restoring some limited commercial flight service to the airport. And so I know that during that meeting, Matt had talked about some of the factors influencing that. And I think whether or not we ever become an embarkment or debarkment port for cruise ships, I don't think necessarily changes the calculation for what that means for the airport in terms of commercial flight service. I think it was just introduced as a possibility. Obviously, we've more recently been talking with folks, been talking even with our developers about kind of future plans to make sure that that's, you know, if there's going to be some expansion of cruise ships into Astoria, we want to make sure that the development is welcoming of that. And that was something that was in the waterfront master plan. Was looking at the possibility of kind of a flex space that could be used as like a welcoming center when passengers get off the vessels. And so I think we are open in the future to exploring some different ideas as we look to increase volume. Obviously, if we're going to take the step to be an embarkment port, there logistically there's some hurdles we're going to have to cover with that. But I think that the conversation really was in the context of the airport, and that was kind of presented as sort of a direction we might be headed. But obviously, we're not there, and no decisions have been made. But there is a desire to increase that volume.
40 to 50 cruise ships a year.
I would hope so, but I again, that's nowhere close to where we're at now. But you know, we're hoping because you know the reality with that is we do have a lot of fixed costs in operating a cruise ship terminal when it comes to, you know, having the infrastructure, being able to dredge. And so, you know, the more ships you can bring in, you can spread that cost with more volume. And so I think added volume in the future is something that the port's interested in. And an embarkment port could be a step in the future. I don't think that's something that in the very near future that's going to happen, but if we could solve some of the logistical challenges, things like how people are going to get to and from here, parking, that kind of thing, then it could be something in the future that is viable.
Any idea at all on what the crossover point is on a graph when too many cruise ships is too many?
In what context? Like what would constitute too many?
There's got to be a crossover point where the wear and tear to the pier and other associated costs make 70 or 80 or 100, whatever it is, too many a year. I don't know. Maybe we should put that to the Finance Committee as you look long term. Thank you for the answer. That does explain it a lot, and I appreciate it.
It had been mentioned in the past by Bruce Connors, but it wasn't reported in such a way that caught people's attention like that number 50 to 60.
Yeah.
So that's nothing's happened yet. And okay. That's a long term.
And that's one of the things it's a, Discussion. And a curse with, you know, providing as much transparency as we can. And even the discussion with the Airport Advisory Committee on restoring some commercial services. Obviously, there's still a lot of steps in order to get that accomplished. But we as a staff thought it was important to get that in front of the Airport Advisory to get kind of a general feeling on kind of how they viewed that, because it wouldn't have made sense if at that meeting as a whole, the advisory committee was saying, no, this is a crazy idea. It's not something we should pursue. Well, then as a staff, it doesn't make sense to put a bunch of time and potentially resources into making that happen only if it's sort of dead on arrival. And so it did get put out there. It did get reported on. Now we've been fielding quite a few questions on all kinds of things having to do with that we're really not ready to answer. We're still very, very early in the process. And so I think it was important we got it out there. But I want to be clear that this is not something that's like happening tomorrow. We're working through a lot of the challenges and I'm hopeful that it can be something that can work in the future. But there are obstacles.
Better or worse, nothing happens overnight at the Port of Astoria or any other governmental entity. So I don't think anyone needs to quite brace for impact quite yet. So thank you for the thoughtful questions and answers. I think that's important. Oh, upcoming meeting dates are the February 17th workshop session. Finance Advisory Committee meets February 18th. And the regular meeting after that is March 3rd. With that, thank you for your attendance, and the meeting is adjourned.